PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to a brand new episode of The Only Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week is a THP community member. A lot of people call him Big Dill. You might know him on Instagram as the go-kart riding Nick Vicente. How are you, buddy?
Pretty good, Candy Daniel. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm not bad. It is, what day is it? Wednesday, which is rattling because unlike some of us, or at least you who spent all day working, I happened to catch a little bit of golf on a Wednesday, which was super weird for me, but I don't mind it because the sooner we get Tori out of the way, the sooner the schedule just keeps going on and makes things interesting. So I didn't mind that. I would assume you didn't get a chance to watch any of the coverage yet.
No, I was in a deposition all day, doing my day job there, trying to make enough money to buy some of this new equipment that's coming out. So trying to look at the bright side of things.
Well, I know you're a familiar name to a lot of our listeners, but there are quite a few who might not frequent the forum. So let's get a little bit of a background on you, Nick. You are, I believe, like a 15-ish handicap. Is that what I saw last time?
Yeah, I've been as low as a 15. Last year, for a moment, when I was playing pretty consistently, right now I think more accurately, probably around a 16, maybe touching a 17. You know, started out my golf journey in 2018, started as a 25 plus, you know, scoring in the 120s. You could check some of the forum posts and see kind of my history there. But you know, working every day to get better, but most importantly, trying to have a good time while doing it.
Well, that's some serious progression. I've been at this game a little bit longer than that. I've always been fascinated and very impressed at how people can pick up this game later on in life and still have the ability to progress the way that you have. It's very fun to see. I'm curious right out of the gate, what is it like as a guy who's fairly new to golf, engaging with some of these crazy perspectives on the equipment and things like that? You know, because you oftentimes hear like, oh, the historical opinion on this, or like a, you know, a club that was made 20 years ago. And you're like, I didn't even know what golf was 20 years ago. Why do I care? Is that weird for you when people make that argument?
So it is very strange to me that some golfers have a hard time adapting to the concept that things can be improved year over year. Because when you apply it to other things in your life, whether that be televisions or your phone, computers or your car, it's such common practice for people to continually upgrade and continue to want just the cutting edge of technology. But when you go to golf clubs, people think that a club 20 years ago does the same thing that a golf club made today will, just because they both hit a white ball, or in some cases, I guess now in these wild times in 2022, a two color neon ball, you know, forward. And it's been, you know, something that I've dealt with a lot in my own kind of like personal golf journey here over the last few years, because my two main playing partners are one of my good friends who actually got me into golf in 2018 because he was a golfer growing up, and my father-in-law, who I work with and play a lot of rounds with. And my buddy was very adamant. He was playing some very old clubs, still has some old clubs in his bag, and just would always tell me, why do you have new clubs all the time? Every time I see you have a new stick, you know, what can change? You're just wasting money. And then I just started hitting it farther and farther and farther. And eventually he's like, hey, let me see that driver. And yeah. Now he's playing a Cobra Forge Tex with graphite shafts and a, you know, F9 head from Cobra and all of that. So he's not quite on the newest cycle, but, you know, he's on a cycle behind. And same thing with my father-in-law. We got him fit up about a year and a half ago during COVID. And, you know, I think he's about 68 years old now and still hitting the ball off the tee, you know, 240 pretty consistently and enjoying the heck out of the game. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what it's about.
So you said Forge Tech, did you say with graphite shafts in it?
Yeah, they are. He has a set of recoils in there.
Some customs?
It was a set that I put together.
Yeah.
They are 110 Protos. It's a set that I put together, played them for a little bit, and was hitting a few line drives. So, you know, he has a little bit of a better tempo, a little bit better swing. They fit him well, and he's had him in his bag ever since.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure I saw those a number of times, and there's probably an envy on the forum of those sweet, sweet custom recoils, the THP logo on them. But great clubs and super fun to hit. Obviously, in that brand new segment, we're seeing the distance with performance with a presentation that isn't just your dad's shovel, as it were. So, but you are also really into Ben Hogan. You've got some, I believe, PTX Pros that you can't seem to depart with.
Yeah, so those are the ones that have those fancy, recoil 110 Proto custom THP logo, super sharp, you know, one of six, I think, sets of clubs, you know. And first of all, I never get rid of them. Those are going to be my clubs for life. I'll put them on the wall at some point, I'm sure. But number one, they're gorgeous, right? Black heads, black shaft, you know, really done up nice. And really, I would say the club that got me serious about golf, serious about trying to get a little bit better, that was the event where I said, you know, if I'm going to be doing this stuff and I'm going to take golf a little bit more seriously, I got to get lessons. So I started taking lessons, and that set of clubs just fit me really well. So I have in my bag now, or in my arsenal, so to speak, I have a combo set of the Srixon ZX5, ZX7, you know, split at the 7-iron. And I've hit those a little bit, and they're great clubs, but nothing plays like the Hogans. And I was actually X-Man on the forum when we were playing around together. And I just brought them out randomly, and he said, you know, Nick, if I ever see you with any other set of clubs, I'm just going to take your bag off the car and throw it in the garbage. And I said, well, I think that's it. Because I definitely play them the best clubs that I've had over the last about 3.5 year period.
Yeah, they're a great set of clubs. I've enjoyed them every time I've touched them, especially with that DBM finish. It's insane how good that wears if you take care of them.
Unbelievable how well it's held up. I've hit off mats, I've hit off gravel, I've hit rocks, I've hit them out of waste areas, and they look still, you know, about my 7-iron is probably an 8 out of 10, and most of my other irons are probably in the 9+.
So I guess the question is, aside from the fact that they're super rare and cool and custom, you've dabbled pretty heavily in graphite iron shafts. The nice part about being a fairly new golfer is you don't have those ridiculous perspectives built in that maybe the people who started with a driver with a steel shaft and it would have. But where do you sit with the decision making when it comes to shafts for clubs? Are you very much down the line, or are you big time graphite for life guy?
It's hard for me to answer that question directly because I am a huge fan of the True Temper shafts, and specifically the Dynamic Gold line. I think they're phenomenal shafts. I played the 105s for a while. I had them in a set of P790s that I received from a THP experience in 2018. And I mean, I love them. I love those clubs. What ended up happening with me is I was playing at that point, you know, hitting off mats, doing things like that, and ended up developing some really bad, you know, kind of tennis elbow, ironically, from swinging a golf club. And then I had the opportunity to get the graphite recoils, you know, from another experience with THP, and really went in with an open mind thinking, you know, are these going to play the same? And, you know, as much as I love that steel feel of the DG 105s, I don't think I'm ever going to go back. It's not a knock on that. It's just I feel like I could play so much more golf, so much more comfortably. When I was playing the 790s, I felt like I was always on a swing count. Hey, you know, I can hit a small bucket today because I hit a small bucket yesterday. Now with these graphite shafts, I can play, you know, around the golf and still feel like I can swing. My elbow's fine, have no discomfort. My wrists feel pretty good. So, you know, as far as performance goes, I think they're phenomenal in that regard. But the main selling point for me has always been the comfort and the ability to play a little bit more often with them.
You know, I had a little laugh early on in the conversation there and that in your response, and it wasn't intended to be offensive. What I was laughing about is this idea that you're fairly new to the game, but you keep name dropping these different sets of irons you've either had in the bag or tried. And that is so, so THP-er. It's unbelievable, you know, and I love it. I'm all for it. I think that experimenting and having fun when you have the opportunity to do it is perfect. You know, a lot of people will say, well, I play golf for this. I think there's many of us who would say I play golf to experience new things and chase perfection. And obviously you're not afraid to do that. Is there anything this year, especially from an iron side, before we move into the rest of your bag, that you're super excited to get your hands on?
Yeah, there actually is. And it's going to be the Cobra LTDX One Links. I really want to get a set of those in my hand. I, for a very short period of time, tried the F9 One Links. I loved them. I thought they fit me pretty well. I moved away from them because I was afraid to make a commitment to the one length iron for the reason you just said. I have so many different clubs. I like trying different things. I have two full bags set up in my garage right now. I have, my buddy earlier has a full bag, you know, that's pretty much mine as well. So, you know, I kind of struggled with, can I bounce from one length to, you know, variable length clubs? But, you know, if I was being honest with myself, I think that the F9s that I played in one length were probably the most consistent irons that I've ever had. I do like the Hogans a little bit better with respect to feel, and I'm probably more comfortable with them now because I've played so much with them. But I envision that in 2022, those one lengths somehow, some way are going to end up in my bag. And if for no other reason, it's quite the experience taking them on a range and watching people grab them and then just swing a short five iron as hard as they can. It's this mental block that people have, and it's just wild to watch in person.
Yeah. You have to mentally prepare yourself to hit a pitching wedge. It's the length of a six or seven iron or whatever you've chosen to go with. It's I remember actually, it's funny, of all the clubs you hit, the significant memories that you get off certain things. And I remember hitting one length for the first time. It was a pitching wedge, and I don't think it went my pitching wedge number. I'm pretty sure it went further. And I'm addressing the style of club there being that I hit it flush and kind of hammered it, which was great. And I think that's going to apply here again to LTDX. I happened to hit them a couple weeks ago and was really impressed with the sound profile, but I also had F9 in the bag at the top of the bag, kind of like Ricky Fowler did. I love that correlation there because we both put a four iron in the bag and loved it. At least I did. He seemed to like it at the Waste Management. So when it comes to Cobra's technology and certainly one length, do you really think you'll be able to commit long-term to it? Is that like the one thing holding you back right now?
I think I would be able to make the commitment long-term because I would make the commitment mentally that those were going to be my clubs, and whatever else comes out, I'm just going to have to watch other people hit. I'm not saying that it'll be the only set of clubs that I own, the only set of irons that I own. There might be a day or two where I go on the range with something else just to scratch an itch. But, you know, look, I think I'm at the point now where I'm not playing as consistently as I would like. You know, during that 2019, 2020 period, I was playing quite a bit. Work was a little bit less on me. I was able to do a lot more. Now, you know, career has picked up a little bit more. Just my special niche prevents me from, you know, kind of getting out on the course quite as often as I did. So I think given all the circumstances, I would be able to make that commitment. And I think it's necessary if you're going to give the one length option a full and fair, you know, shakeout. There are times, like you said, where you have a pitching wedge in your hand. It's a little bit surreal. Full disclosure, I'd probably go with a two length setup, maybe, you know, use the wedges a little bit shorter, because I do remember from that F9 set, they're fairly long, frankly, especially on touch shots. But yeah, I think with that in mind and going in with a plan, now that I've played them for a short period of time, I would have no qualms about doing it and telling people, you know, all about it on the forum, and maybe a little bit of poetry as well mixed in.
Yeah, one length-ish. I like that. What about driver, man? I mean, obviously, we've got some big new releases this year. No shortage of product offerings. We also have a company out there who's recreating a 20-year concept with going carbon in the face, which is pretty wild. But what is the big target for you right now?
So I've been playing a Cobra driver since 2018. The only one that I've missed since then has been last year at the Rad Speed. I did hit it a little bit faster and a little bit farther. I just never really got around to buying one since I wasn't playing as often. So I think the LTDX has, you know, has my attention. I do want to try to hit the LTD XLS 9-degree just for fun to say I did it. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to hit it very well at all. I'm curious to see who does, because that thing sounds like it's a low spin machine. But that just whole lineup, you know, with the three driver heads that they have out now has my attention. And, you know, it'd be hard to ignore what Callaway has going on as well. You know, good friends with Tevener on the forum. He is raving about his driver. And I, you know, went to an experience with him where he was fitting a Cobra driver and he loved it then. And he's telling me that this new Callaway lineup is really phenomenal. So I think I owe it to myself to go give those a shot as well.
What is he paying you for the name drop? How did he know about this, and what is he paying you?
So I kind of burned him pretty good on the forum tonight, I think. So I figured I owed him a little yeah. redemption here. He's a good guy. You know, he also did me another favor in unloading a putter cover for me that was otherwise unable to be sold to anybody for a lack of want.
Really?
So, okay. Yeah, so I, you know, he's always been a good guy, and, you know, I think the whole Granddaddy crew this year just did a phenomenal job. I mean, it was a tremendous follow. I enjoyed the heck out of it doing it. I think for the first time in a long time, I felt like I was part of it, you know, just cheering okay. people on. You were kind of living it live, and yeah, you know, I think credit where credit's due. You know, he's made a point to tell me how great it is, and you know, told me, I think he actually texted me, said, I can't tell you about it, but you got to go hit it when you learn about it.
All right. Tell you what you're hitting, but in about a month, you're going to go hit this thing. You're going to love it.
Exactly.
That's great. Right. So it is interesting. I do have a question for you, because there's a little bit more complexity nowadays with products that are coming out. You have, I mean, they're great examples. Titleist alone is TSI 1-4. They have, even though it's not really that progression, they have three in the Cobra lineup. There's, I believe, four heads in the Callaway lineup. Is it hard for you to figure out what works for you? Do you go to a fitter? What's your strategy when it comes to buying products like that, where there's a lot of options?
So with so many options, the first thing I do is try to get as much information that I can from what the company's telling me. So if the company has spent the time and energy to create a marketing message around their product, I want to listen to it. Whether I accept it all or whether I challenge it internally, it's just something I want to hear. So I want to start from, what do you want me to know about this? And then from there, I'll check the THP forum, see what other players are hitting. You know, people that I know, people that I've seen swing, people that I think would play a similar style to what I would play, and see what their feedback is. And from there, kind of fine tune. So I usually know that maybe if there's four options or three options, I usually narrow it down to one or two that would probably, you know, fit. For example, I don't necessarily need a driver with a draw bias. I do a pretty good job of getting it turned over when I swing well. So maybe I don't need kind of that help. So I might shy away from that. But ultimately, you know, the goal is to get in a bay, to get them in your hands, and to hit them consistently and give them a fair shot. Because, you know, there are certainly times for everybody that, you know, me specifically, that I'm hitting a club thinking this is it, and it was not at all correct. Great example of that is last year I changed my three wood to a Callaway, and was playing the Epic Max, and it's not a club I would have picked up in my hand, you know, off the rack and said, this is it. I went in there with the full intention of leaving with an Epic Speed. And, you know, the guy who runs the shop said, hey man, you got to try this. This is going to be great for you. And it absolutely was. So, you know, keep an open mind and give it a shot, and hopefully bring a pretty decent swing that day. You know?
Yeah. That's the kicker, right? The Callaway's talking pretty big this year that their fairway is going to be a monster, or already is. I picked apparently a terrible year to swear off fairway woods, but hey, it's fine. Fairway woods and mallets, not my deal. I'll probably give up on that by April. So
I won't tell anybody if you won't. All right.
Yeah, no one's listed. Just, it's fine.
We'll keep that between us.
Yeah, right? Sure. So where do you think you land? Do you think you go Cobra? Do you think you go Cali? What's the prediction? Do you go sideways and try out the new Mizuno driver and think, oh my goodness, where has it been all my life? What do you think you land?
Mizuno is not a club that I've ever had in my bag, so it definitely piques my interest.
there we go.
But I think what I'm going to end up with this year is some combination of both. I think I'm going to have, most likely what I'm leaning towards is a Callaway fairway wood and probably the Cobra driver. And, you know, the main reason for that is I've been playing the Link shaft from, UST Mamiya, and it's just been like it was made for me. You know, I'm playing the gunmetal, a 6F4, and it's just been phenomenal, you know, for me. So if I can keep that same shaft and play this year, I probably will. And, roll with that. So I think that's going to dictate probably my driver selection, and then probably fairway would be some sort of Callaway product.
So I've got a little bit of experience with M40X, the new Link. Pretty awesome. Pretty exciting stuff there.
I got one of those bad boys in my 3-wood, and it is a monster.
Yes, that's awesome.
Absolute monster. Yep.
So I'm actually starting the year with a Srixon driver of the bag, ZX5. I know it's not new tech, but I'm super curious about it. So I grabbed the M40X in blue, and I'm really excited to see what that rebound frame technology is like, because it is a step away. It's a little bit different, and I love that. I love that companies are going in a bunch of different ways to effectively come to the same conclusion that we need help as golfers to get the ball straight and forward, right?
I love to hear you say that, because it reminds me of one of the first, you know, videos I watched on THP was you hitting, I think it was the F9 in studio and just flushing it off the face and, you know, complaining about a 3-millimeter miss. And I'm thinking, you know, that would be me flushing it like, oh my God, I don't know if I can have a better golf swing. So, you know, I don't know if you need the help as much as people like me. I could tell you that I've been the personal R&D department for Cobra with that full wrap face that they have going on. I've hit it on the extreme. It's super forgiving.
Yeah.
But I think you were making a good choice there with that Srixon driver. I know Granite Roots had one in the bag for a little bit, and he flushed that thing pretty good. So I think you might be in good company there. I think you might be happy with it.
Yeah, that's the fun part, the exciting thing of, you know, you try most things and some things sneak through the cracks, and suddenly you're like, okay, this is an opportunity to really take some time and experience it. And that's what I'm doing here, and I'm excited about it. But it's not to say I'm going to ignore what's going on this year. I mean, obviously, I've been no secret that I think F9 was one of the best drivers that Cobra has ever made. Second only maybe to LTD, which I was both absolutely in love with. So when they merged the two conversations, it's like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing there. But then you have Callaway, man. I've always been like the every other year kind of guy, where I would lean on, you know, that not so much the Rogue release or the Maverick release, but rather the Epic release. So for them to come out with this Rogue ST, and we had Firska on a couple weeks ago talking about how it could be for everyone kind of thing. You got guys out on tour just absolutely clobbering it. It's like, oh, okay, I'm listening. I'm here with you. I'm not going to ignore what I should at least experience once or twice. And it sounds like you're about to do the same thing.
I mean, shouldn't golf be fun? Why not go out there and hit the latest and greatest? And, you know, I say this all the time on the course, right? Like, I'm not out here to be miserable. If I wanted to be miserable, I'd go back to my job. I'm out here to have a great time. And if that's something, a new technology driver, you know, I'm all for it. And if it makes me just have a little bit more happiness on the course, I'm all in for it.
Well, tell me about your perspective on the game, because you're fairly new to it. And most of the time that I don't know your familiarity with golf from a watching perspective or just basic, like prior to this year, I really didn't know it existed kind of thing. But it seems to be those who have a fairly storied approach to the game are very, I don't want to say stuffy, because that's unfair. I mean, I've been involved in the game of golf one way or another for 30-ish years. So I'm not going to sit here and say I'm stuffy because I've been in here that long, but you sort of anchor into some things. But the fairly new players have that freedom to say, you know, the governing bodies, what are they talking about? Take me down that route a little bit. What you look at golf from, like, an apparel standpoint, from the way people act when they're out there. Do you think it's in a good place? Do you like the way golf represents?
So I think that I was lucky in with respect to entering the game at a time where it was a little more of a relaxed atmosphere. You weren't expected to have like a super stuffy approach. The shoes were more relaxed. The clothing was more relaxed. I'm still a believer, tucked in shirt, look clean, look kept, you know, make sure that you're looking your best. You look good. I think you play good. I'm not out there criticizing people, you know, play your game, do your style. The one thing that I have seen, especially through this COVID period, is new and more new players kind of enter the game at this particular point, is a lot less of the course etiquette. You know, I'm all for the relaxed style. You know, you want to wear golf cleats that look like, you know, the latest sneakers, all for it, you know, do you enjoy it, but still rake your bunker, still make sure you're fixing your divots. You know, that I see a little bit less. So I think golf is in a good place with respect to approachability, but now I'm afraid it's maybe going a little bit too far. Don't want to sound like a stuffy person. I'm still about music on the course. You want to have a couple, you know, beverages, you know, I'm all for it. But, you know, from my journey, you know, specifically, you know, I've always been comfortable. I feel comfortable on the course. I feel comfortable to be out there. You know, from where golf's at now, and I don't come in with any preconceptions of it. You know, I've been lucky enough, credit to the people on the forum, credit to my friends who I play with most of my rounds. It's been super approachable and very relaxed. You know, I'm not out there to chase a number. I'm not out there to be the best golfer I can be, not out there to be on the PGA Tour. I'm just out there to have a good couple hours with some buddies.
Yeah, the Champions Tour written all over you, right?
Hey, you know, I'll never say never to anything like that, you know, but if I could see the work it's going to take already, and I'm not sure I'm ready to make that time commitment, but, you know, I tell you what, you jump, I'll jump. So if you want to do it together, then if I have somebody to do it with me, I guess we can work it out.
I'll hop on the bag for you, no problem. Happy to carry it. Happy to lug it around. Tell me a bit about golf where you've played, and have you done much traveling for golf? Have you seen different types of grass?
So I haven't traveled much for golf, except for after I joined the THP forum, which is, you know, another testament of something that when I start playing golf, I never thought that I would actually want to throw some clubs on a plane and travel and play a ton of Florida golf. So I'm spoiled in that way. You know, we got a lot of great courses down here.
There's an awful lot of Bermuda there, though. I don't know.
there is. But, you know, like, it's kind of like telling a fish, you know, about water. If it's, you know, what you're living in every day, it just becomes normal. So I play a ton of Florida golf, you know, some North Florida golf. I usually take a trip up to, you know, Palm Coast, play Hammock Beach, or up to Jacksonville, usually once or twice a year. But yeah, no traveling. I played in South Carolina with a group, played, just came back from Austin not too long ago with a great group of THPers, you know, and just kind of hopped around as much as I can. And you know, it's kind of on my 2022 list as well. Just play, more of the middle of the country, maybe up in your neck of the woods. You know, I hear some pretty good golf in Ohio these days, you know, or
decent,
maybe.
Yeah. Decent. So you haven't really gotten a taste of the old bent grass, have you?
I have not. But, you know, hey, this year's a new opportunity to do that.
So is that super curious for you? Because I've had this like mental block on Bermuda for the longest time. It's not like I can't figure it out. The problem is I play on one type of grass and then eventually I take one trip and for a weekend I sit in like my own little glass case of emotion trying to figure out Bermuda. You know, it's just a different concept. Do you ever get super curious, like what in the heck are these people talking about, and are you excited to actually experience the difference for yourself?
So I'd like to think that I would recognize the difference to begin with, that I would have a game that's fine-tuned enough that I'm like, oh man, you know, I should have got like a foot more roll there. Yeah. I'm usually in a position of like, I'm just glad my ball can be hit a second or a third time. So I would hope that I wouldn't overthink it. And, you know, but yeah, I mean, look, you know, golf to me is all about the experience. It's not about the result. So if the experience is to play on a new type of course, you know, new type of grass, I'm all in for that. And, you know, of course I'm curious when I see some people who don't live where I live, play golf and have that different experience, including, you know, having to brush leaves off a green. I've never experienced that in my life. You know, everything's always nice where I'm playing down here, you know, or seated or punched. That's really the only issue. So, yeah, you know, I definitely have that interest there. I would be lying to you if I told you I had this burning desire, you know, to try it, but, you know, promise me a good time with somebody I think I'm going to get along with and a round of golf and I'm there.
Yeah. I mean, we'll let you look for the grain on the first green for about 10 minutes before you tell them, before we tell you there isn't any.
Oh, I don't know if I'm a big green, you know, big grain reader on the green to begin with. I'm usually a point and shoot kind of guy. I live by the motto that if I'm going to stink, I better stink quickly. So,
yeah, I think the thing that is super curious to me as we follow the tour around watching tour golf or maybe follow some of these incredible THP events is the different, I don't think atmospheres, backgrounds, I suppose you could say the backdrops for these events are so unique. Like you have one place you go to that has mountains everywhere. You have another place that has desert everywhere. You have another place that has pine everywhere. And it's just, that's always been really fascinating to me and something I appreciate beyond just the architecture of the golf course. But the idea that you can travel X amount of hours and play in a totally different atmosphere is super cool to me. It's so different from every other sport where you have these confines that you have to play in, whereas golf, it's whatever that wants to be in that specific region based on the person who's designing it. I love that.
100% right. You know, and just whether it's watching on TV or watching in, you know, just people even on the forum posting, you know, about their round of golf that they might be playing at a place that I otherwise would never go to, and just seeing how that designer integrated the landscape. I mean, when I go to a course and I see it for the first time, and you can really tell that there was some architectural thought process and design of trying to incorporate, you know, the course layout in the natural topography, you know, it's always, you know, warms my heart a little bit. It makes me more excited to get out there and play. So, you know, I kind of have my eye in the Arizona area, you know, this year, if I'm going to go out west, you know, maybe 2022, early 2023, and just try something a little bit different, you know, a little desert golf, which I think might be the polar opposite of what I'm playing here in South Florida.
And the opposite direction of Tevner, which is a good play, obviously.
Well, you brought it up. I mean, I didn't want to say it, but that is true. He lives in, I think, Southern Canada at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to make much golf up there, especially this time of the year.
Man, tough crowd in the room here. Hey, I wanted to ask you about golf collectibles as it is. There is a pretty huge component of the game right now, especially from an Instagram and social perspective, that more and more companies are having the ability to create unique, I suppose you could call some of them trinkets. A lot of them are putters, a lot of putter covers. What got you into that? Because I know you collect some things and it doesn't even stop there because you're also a feral guy, I think, a little bit. So give me a quick dive on what drives you into the collectible side of golf.
I always like it when people see me with something that either they don't have or that's special edition or something like that. I'm a collector of things. And if I've learned over the years, if I'm going to collect things, I want them to be things of quality, not things of quantity. Okay. So I'm known to buy, you know, a ball marker for $100 and then pray that I don't lose it, you know, on the first hole, like what happened to me on Saturday last week.
Wait, what?
Yeah. What? So I got this, a Kraken, you know, ball marker. It's custom made, looks like a tiny credit card. Has my name on it and everything, and I'm like really excited.
Does about it have it. Your credit card number on there too?
So I wish I asked for that not to be on there. That could be dangerous, especially if the cart girl makes it around more than once. So I have it in my pocket and just, you know, not thinking, putting my stuff in round or very early morning round where there it's still dark out. So I'm kind of hustling a little bit. And put it in my pocket and then not thinking, put my leg up on the cart. Buddy pulls out and then, you know, you hear a drop and it's pitch black outside. So we took about 5 minutes to look for it. Couldn't find it. I'm like, man, the thing hasn't even seen the course and it's already a goner. So, you know, let it go, washed it off, went and played the round at the turn, you know, took a quick little look at it because we passed the clubhouse area. Couldn't find it. And then at the end of the round, you know, I said, hey, let me just take one more look through. Still couldn't find it. And my buddy just by chance found it in the middle of the parking lot. It got run over like three times, so it's a little worse for wear, but it came back in my pocket. So, you know, I don't know. It's kind of had me rethinking, you know, what's reasonable to spend on these little, you know, as you put them like trinkets or, you know, kind of like custom golf items. But, you know, it's an interesting little kind of explosion, right, in the golf world, because it used to be that you would have to rely on, you know, the Bernardis of the world, for example, you know, to make something that's really cool, a special release. And now you have people like me or you in their home with these, you know, CNC machines or, you know, 3D printers or whatever it might be, making like really creative, really cool items that are, you know, purposely unique and limited to, you know, customized to you.
Ideally unique. Let's you know, not pretend that some folks are recycling. And you know what? That's fine. I like it when there's a new take on something that's been done. And we've seen that a little bit. And I definitely think back, I love that you said Bettinardi, because they're definitely a company who's done a lot of markers as that being an example. And I think all the way back to Scotty stuff. And I mean, Scotty at this point, trying to buy anything aftermarket for their product is, it's gouging is no really better way to put it. I mean, I've got right behind me here a putter head cover I paid $100 for. I would be shocked if I couldn't get at least a few to maybe 400 for right now, which is insane to me for a used head cover. But I mean, that's kind of the condition we're in. So my question back to you, and especially when it comes to, well, I didn't have a big allegiance 20 years ago to Scotty, so I'm not like hyper focused on him. Is there a company or companies that you do have a hyper focus on when you go to collect at this point?
At this point, I would say the largest portion of my collection is swag, but I've kind of pulled off of them a little bit, just because the quantities have gone up and the market has changed in a way that I don't know if I'm really rewarded as a collector as much as I was before. And I'm saying collector specifically as opposed to, you know, flipper or reseller. You know, because at the end of the day, I'm buying what I want. You know, you never know what you're going to keep. It just so happens that sometimes you can make, you know, an amount of money and buy something you like more. So right this moment, to answer your question, I think Sugar Skull is probably where I'm at with respect to putter covers. A group of us on the forum just signed up for the Epitome Golf putter company, I suppose, or,
yeah,
you know, company who's making more limited materials, you know, more exotic materials in their putter covers. And we're signed up for their monthly.
Oh, you know, you did the cover of the month. Yeah. Okay.
We did with them, and they're pretty wild. You know, my first cover, is a tiki guy, but it has this, you know, kind of sparkly, vinyl, you know, material that's worked into it. It's pretty wild looking thing. So,
okay.
I think that's where I'm at pretty much with, you know, with Sugar Skull, you know, at this point. I like what they're doing. It's super creative the way they're integrating, you know, a new way of doing a skull, which is, as you know, super common now. Yeah. And seems to be, you know, just about everywhere.
Yeah, I like what Epitome is doing. And I think I like them mostly because their most common cover is a big giant E, which is obviously suitable for me being last name Edwards. So I could see one of those sneaking into the collection for me personally, but yeah, I think to your point, the conversation with how saturated it is right now has to start and stop with quality. And if you don't have quality, then is there really any point in trying to compete with all these other groups that are gaining so much traction right now, at least from the crazy collector side?
Yeah, 100%. You know, the quality is going to be there, if not with one company, with a competitor company. And if you don't have that high quality, you're absolutely going to lose market share. You know, not to pick on swag, but, you know, one of the reasons why I've kind of moved away with them is, you know, some of the covers I had, especially more fluorescent ones, would fade over time, you know, relatively quickly. You know, I'd have,
really?
Yeah, I would have, you know, one of the flipper covers I had, I took about one round and was noticeably faded at the top. And, you know, look, it's not a complaint. It's not really even a criticism. It's just an observation that, you know, given the qualities, I would pick something that has a higher quality, you know, than that.
I don't think the point of those were to game them, Nick. I'm pretty sure that you're supposed to flip them. I think that's the idea there. Yeah.
depends on what definition of gaming you're using there. So yeah, I think
true.
We're both right true. And wrong.
Yeah. Wow. Fair play. There's one other thing I wanted to ask you about, and that's golf ball. It's 100% my focus right now. Maybe not 100%. It is incredibly focused right now for me to find a ball for 2022. Do you have one you've landed on yet?
So I was extremely lucky back in October to be one of the first people I want to say in the nation, you know, certainly outside of the Callaway company, to be able to play the 2022 Chrome Soft. And, you know, to full disclosure, it's not a ball I played a lot going into that time when I got it in my hands. I was coming from playing the Bridgestone Tour BX, a ball that was great for me. But, the 2022 Chrome Soft just blew me away. The feel, super soft. The sound was phenomenal. But most importantly, just it gave me a little more spin as somebody who would traditionally try to find a ball. Give me a little more spin than the Tour BX did, but traditionally we'd try to find a ball, you know, that was on the lower spin side, but still would get up and elevate. And okay. This new Chrome Soft is just getting up in the air and carrying and carrying and carrying. I've had some of my longest drives that I can remember lately. I'm still getting the ball to stop on the green. And I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that this is going to be the ball for 2022 and beyond.
I really appreciated the part where you said super soft, either intentionally or not, considering that's a part of their ball lineup. But, you know, are you talking about dropping the line Chrome Soft? Are we talking about CSX, CSX, LS? Which one was it?
I was playing the regular Chrome Soft or the standard Chrome Soft.
Nice.
Yeah, it would be between the Chrome Soft or the XLS. But I think I'm going to go with the Chrome Soft this year, at least for my first 24 dozen.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Why 20?
I have this idea in my head. I think it's kind of a wild idea that I just want to buy like a case of golf balls. Just as many comes from factory to like a store. I want that case. I'm not even sure how much it costs. I'm not even sure how many there are. I assume it's like 24, but I just want a ton of golf balls so I don't have to look for a box of balls for the immediate future.
Is this like an at-home delivery? You want to hear the truck backing up and beeping at you, and then like they get the lift out, drop it down? But we're at pallet point here. Let's not slow play and only get a box. You may as well get a pallet.
If I can find somebody to sell it to me, I'll 100% do it. if I can get Amazon to deliver it to me, that's even better. But yeah, however I can get my hands on that, I think that's what's going to happen. And I promise you, I'm going to play every single one and eventually lose every single one and have the best time doing it.
That's awesome. Hey, Nick, do you have any questions for me?
So do have some questions for you. And, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot here. But,
yeah, you did.
You know, I saw that it looked like you were throwing a little bit of shade on the forum to golf.com regarding a recent Instagram post. And, you know, I just felt like you had something to get off your chest. Is there something you want to share with the class about how you feel perhaps about some flattery, I think, that's being shown your way with respect
to the process? There's nothing new here. I'm pretty salty about the acquisition, I suppose, if you will, the borrowed concept of the name Off Course as a podcast, and apparently my blood is not cooling over that. So anytime I see golf.com, I just kind of cringe at this point. Gotta wonder if the caption which they brought on was mocking Mr. Kepka and his blonde hair, which they termed Slim Shady hair, which I thought was a miss anyway, because isn't he supposed to have a buzz cut if that's the case? But the first thing I thought was, oh, gross, it's golf.com. And the second thing I thought of was, wow, I wonder where they stole that phrase from. So, yeah, it's not a healthy thing. Hopefully I move on at some point. But I suppose until they cease and or desist on the name borrow, we'll be in the same location we are now.
Well, they say that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. So maybe you can look at that glass half full, but at least they took a newer concept from you. I don't know if they had to hop in the DeLorean and go back 20 years to get that reference to Slim Shady.
Yeah, certainly they're not topical. For sure. Yeah.
But, you know, maybe yeah, you know, you guys, I guess you got to get by where you can get by.
Right. Yeah. Well, moving on. What else you got for me?
So the second question I have for you is a debate that I've had internally with several people, some on the forum, some not, some personally. But, you know, I think in my golf journey, going back to what you asked me before, I think having a smaller size club in the Ben Hogan PTX Pros, which has a smaller kind of profile, at least to your eye, but still a relatively forgiving club, had helped me really hone in my swing and try to find the center of the club face more consistently, and ultimately made me a more consistent swinger and by extension a better golfer. So I think having a club that is, especially as a higher handicap, that is, for lack of a better term, more aspirational, might be a good thing, as opposed to just always going to the most forgiving club or a GI set or something like that. And then I noticed that you said you're going to be playing a set of blades this year. Is that right?
Yeah, you're stacking me here, aren't you?
So do you think that playing a more difficult to hit club, you know, generally speaking, might help you become a better golfer?
Like a better ball striker or a better golfer?
Well, I mean, I think both, right? You know, whether a better ball striker in the sense of being more consistent or finding, you know, a more narrow dispersion. And then by extension, whether that translates into being a better golfer in the sense of a lower golf score.
Yeah, well, there's a threshold for everything, right? You had mentioned PTX Pro, which is a hollow body profile. You didn't mention something like their smaller, very small blade style, the Fort Worth irons. You obviously got to a point and you said, I'm not going to go any further than this because now we're just getting into crazy territory. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, degrees, right?
Yeah. So I think it's a two stage question. Number one, I think people should play the most forgiving iron they can stomach to look at, that suits their game, and it supports their stroke. So if they get to a point where, and I've felt this way for a long time, right now, up until I'm going to progress into the 221/225 combo from Mizuno, I had their forged irons in play, which are a couple steps away from a very playery, a playery iron. And I would say that my iron striking is probably one of the best parts of my game. So I've always deferred to that side of things where I'd say, if you have the ability to game something and you don't feel like it's a detriment, if anything, it improves it, then I would say no. From purely an improvement standpoint, I think there's an awful lot of mental gymnastics going on because the middle of the face is still the middle of the face. The only thing you're doing with a smaller iron is not getting away with it. So from a pure practice standpoint, I guess you could make the argument if you go and hit 100 balls with a bladed 7 iron, you could probably say that you achieved a little bit more by getting to the center of the face. But at that same regard, I don't think there's any sort of magic pill that comes with playing a less forgiving iron that makes you a better player overall. I think that pure practice is what's going to get you there.
So are you the guy who would go to a lesson and then practice when you get home and put that work in, or are you a lesson to lesson guy? I know you're not, you haven't been big on lessons up to this point, right?
I'm huge on lessons. If you can find someone who will help you. The last lesson I had, I paid $45 for someone to tell me, actually, that's not true. For a half hour, I talked through what I believe to be my swing flaws. And I paid $45 for someone to agree with me without solution. So, I at this point, so what I'm doing right now is I'm struggling coming over the top a little bit, which is traveling all the way through my bag. It used to be just my driver. So right now I'm trying to find either a condition, a drill, or a coach who can support moving me into that good groove. And I think when I find it, it's been a combination of frustration and embarrassment what has happened to my driver swing, because the video you had referenced earlier in the show, if I hit a drive like that, I'd probably freak out right now because it's so much better than what's going on. So to your point, yeah, I think if I found something, I it's kind of like it's kind of like cracked me, man. Like, as soon as you hit that shot, like, I need to hit 50 more of those and then I can move on. I'm not going to say, oh yeah, okay, I see what you're saying here. I'll go try it next week when I play. No, hell no. If I do it once, I'm going to go do it 50 times and try and remind myself. I might even set an alarm halfway through the night to click it back in there. Maybe take a couple swings in the bedroom to get there. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's such a finite thing, getting a good swing and a good path. I'm not the guy who would sit on that. No,
I think that's spot on. You know, as a higher handicapper that's been like on a journey, I think my goal, my realistic goal, is to be a 10 at some point, and then I would be happy. I think that's a good number to travel with. I think that's a good number that you can play in just about any foursome and be comfortable in. Mm-hmm. I think I'm not there yet, but it's, you know, making sure that if you're taking the time to put in the lessons, you find a coach that you like, to make sure that you're doing that work between the lessons to repeat that, and make sure when you're going to that next lesson, you're not working on the same thing you did the week before because you don't have it dialed in. It's more common than you know, I realized, you know, and I even fell into that trap a little bit. But biggest strides that I made, you know, for those higher handicaps out there that started, you know, like me, you know, basically non-functional golfer, was getting on, you know, the right swing principles as early as you can, and then making sure you're hitting, you know, a bucket or two, you know, maybe twice between your lesson there, to make sure you're getting honed in.
Yeah. To kind of circle on that, I think the best coaches out there do two things. They explain what's wrong and they tell you how to really break it. And by break it, I mean, they give you a drill that by the time you go and see them the next time, you're doing the complete opposite. So if you're hitting a fade, you want to go next time hitting a draw. You know, you want to smother that damn thing the next time you get a lesson. And then they can, like, all right, we'll fix you again. And as you continue to get a better understanding of the golf swing, I think that's where you really start to master it, at least from your skill level. Because just telling you to put your hand somewhere when you're at the top of your backswing, I mean, you may as well tell me what you're having for breakfast, because it's not computing for me. It's just not going to do it. Everyone's different. For me, it's like, you're going to tell me to put my hand there, I'm just going to swing the way I normally do and say, did I put my hand there? So.
Yeah. 100%. And, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, failure is okay too. You know, not every swing is going to be perfect. And the great thing about this game, and I think what keeps me coming back, is that, you know, every hole, every swing's a new opportunity, a new chance to really, you know, get that swing honed in and hit a good golf shot and be really, you know, happy with, you know, with the success that you would see out there and having a good time doing it. I'll have fun on a golf course, whether I shoot, you know, low or I shoot high, as long as I have that attitude, you know, that I'm going to have fun out there. But yeah, I'd be lying to you if I told you that it's not more fun when you're hitting the ball well and, you know, walking up to a par three with your putter in your hand, you know, ribbing your buddy, saying, hey, you know, I'll just be up here while you're chipping from the adjacent fairway.
Yeah, take your time. Yeah, for sure. Do you have anything else for me, buddy, or are you good?
No, I think I put you on the spot pretty good. Yeah, you know, I could probably ask you a couple other questions, but, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know if I want to know the answer. I was going to ask you who dropped out, you know, that stuck you with me today, but maybe we'll just pretend like I was choice number one.
Yeah.
Make me feel better.
Obviously you were. Yeah. It's Wednesday. We're not scrambling. It's not Thursday night. So there was some room, and I'm going to tell you, you took someone else's spot, if that makes you feel any better. So,
you know, the number one quality I have is availability.
There you go. Me too, buddy. Well, hey, Nick, it was fun having you on, man. I love getting a greater perspective of the game, especially when it comes from someone who's either from a different path of mine or from a different entry into the game than I have. I mean, I grew up with it. You're fairly new to it. Super cool to get your perspective. And I love the way you attack golf. You say, I want to try everything. I'm not afraid to try everything. I don't need to be stuck in my ways. And you're the guy out there telling your boys, cut it out with these old irons, this technology. I mean, there's 20 years in between this and your new product, but you're going to go spend $50 on some Pro Vs and then go pay and spend $70 to play this golf course with these clubs that you might not even get $100 for in total. You know, that is cool. I love that you're that guy. And yeah, man, I just appreciate you. Thanks for coming on.
Of course, man. Hey, thanks for having me on the one, the only Off Course podcast. The number one podcast in golf right now.
Yeah, I buy that for sure. Hey, thanks again, man. Everyone, if you're out there playing golf this weekend or watching the Farmers, have fun, enjoy it. Don't take golf too seriously. We're closing in on summer. It's basically here in Ohio. Nick doesn't know what I'm talking about, but you guys do. We'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.